Hello, welcome to Farmgate. I'm Finlow Castain. Since 2017, the Food Farming and Countryside Commission has helped to shape the UK's conversation about food, where it comes from, how it's produced, how far it travels, and where and how it gets sold and eaten. The Commission has successfully brought different stakeholders out of their individual silos and ensured that a creative and multidisciplinary conversation has taken place. One of the Commission's most important contributions is to have put both humans and the farmed landscape back into the food story, using a mixture of personal experiences, case studies, poems, paintings, interspersed among their excellent recommendations. They've helped to remind us that it's people, not companies, who produce food and manage farmland, and that it's people who buy and cook food and then eat and enjoy nutritious meals. They've shown us that food is a dynamic force, constantly reshaping the landscapes we enjoy, not only in the United Kingdom, but around the world. Today, we're here to discuss the Food Farming and Countryside Commission's Wales Inquiry Report, the Wales Field Guide for Future Generations. Sue Pritchard is the Chief Executive of the Food Farming and Countryside Commission. Jane Davidson is the Chair of the Commission's Wales Inquiry. Jane is Pro Vice Chancellor Emeritus at the University of Wales, Trinity St David. And from 2007 to 2011, Jane was the Welsh Government's Minister for Environment, Sustainability and Housing. Welcome both. Sue, let me start by coming to you. The Food Farming and Countryside Commission has moved. You've left the RSA. You struck out alone. What's changed?
Well, in fact, very little has changed, Finlow. We were enormously grateful to Esme Fairbairn Foundation for extending their trust and confidence in us for another 3 years to work up a programme now of implementation. So the time that we spent at the RSA, 2 good years, were focused on inquiry, on investigation, on research and working with people and communities around the UK, as you described so generously in your introduction. But now we have moved on to think very hard about how we make change happen. How do we help implement those recommendations for real, practical and pacey change on the ground? And for that, we wanted to be able to focus absolutely relentlessly and wholeheartedly on our own core mission and purpose. And in conversations with our stakeholders and with our funders, they were very keen to see us set up as an independent charitable organisation able to focus on our own work. But that being said, all of the commissioners have come with us, all of the team has come with us. So we're exactly the same organisation as we were at the RSA. We just now have the capacity to shape and direct our own future.
And there are some new faces because we have the Welsh report, and of course Jane is here as your chair. And I just wonder, you know, the Wales Inquiry is seeking to build on the previous work that you've done. But what is it particularly that the Wales report aims to achieve?
The Wales report tells a very particular story of the unique policy and legal framework that Wales has developed over the last 10 years, really since devolution, of which Jane was one of the absolute key architects, particularly the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act, the Environment Act too. And it tells how that particular framework shapes the possibility in Wales for really radical and interesting work to happen. Now, for the last couple of years, we focused, as we've done around the country actually, on some very particular questions in our county and our country inquiries. And in Wales, we looked very hard at the role of public procurement and how public keystone institutions can use their buying power to help reshape a fairer, more sustainable food system for the country. And that generated some really interesting conclusions, which have already been picked up by other parts of the country. Now we're going to be picking up issues of land use, of a just and sustainable food system, what that means for affordable, healthy, nutritious food for all, and the extent to which the particular public institutions in Wales can play a much stronger leadership role in bringing about change and making change happen.
So you mentioned there the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act, and I'd like to get into, you know, what devolution means and how the Welsh government's approach differs from Westminster, from I suppose what we call the English government's approach these days. But first of all, Jane, can you tell me a bit about the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act? Because I think people outside Wales won't necessarily know that it exists. What is it? Where did it come from? What does it do?
You're absolutely right, Finlow, to think that there are people outside outside Wales who don't know it exists. And I think there'll probably be a number of people in Wales who still don't know it exists either. But very briefly, the Act actually came about because when the National Assembly for Wales started in 1999, the commissioners in the UK government were influenced by civil society in Wales, which was asking for the new institution, the new National Assembly for Wales, to promote sustainable development in everything that it did. And amazingly, that proposition went through Parliament and into the first Government of Wales Act. So when Scotland and Northern Ireland and Wales all were devolved to new legislatures, Wales was the only one that was given that duty to promote. And in fact, over the last 20 years, Wales has wrestled with that duty. The government has wrestled with that duty in terms of what does a government that delivers as with sustainable development as its central organising principle look like. And by the time we got to 2011, it was decided that, in fact, unless there was a law that required the government and all its public services in Wales to deliver sustainable development in everything they did, rather than promote sustainable development, then we wouldn't get an effective delivery.
And it must be a huge difference for government, because government, government tends to sort of work on a 1 or 2 year basis when, you know, it's a couple of years when you get in that you can actually deliver change, and then you're immediately sort of starting to think about the next election. So suddenly having to work on a kind of, you know, a future generation basis, it must be really difficult for politicians who just aren't used to that at all.
Well, I think that was a real part of it. I mean, it is an extraordinarily ambitious agenda, particularly when you think that the Brundtland definition of sustainable development, development that does not compromise the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. When we think in those terms, we think that politics is inherently short term, but actually the challenges that face us on a daily basis are inherently long term in their effects, and often get worse and worse if we don't address them. So actually, the government of Wales was incredibly brave when it put forward the law, and the National Assembly for Wales was incredibly brave when it passed the law. And I was sitting outside politics, having gone into the university sector, and just in awe that these politicians had really debated these issues and decided they did want a law to deliver, not a law to promote. And that is very important, because it does mean that the delivery of the aspirations of the Food and Farming and Countryside Commission are going to be different in Wales, because there are different law and policy tools at our disposal. I mean, there's a common agenda which Sue has just outlined in terms of the production of healthy and nutritious food that everyone can afford to eat, that can be delivered in better connected and more sustainable farming systems, including agroecology, which fully integrate planning and decision making about our land. And that was very much an agreement from the first report. But of course, we have different political structures here as well. I mean, in May next year, the politicians in Wales will go to election. So there's a particular opportunity for us here to think about, well, what structures do we need in government to ensure that decisions are not taken in policy silos? What can we do to ensure that food is central to local decision making and planning? What would happen if we put agroecology at the centre of the Welsh approach to the well-being of future generations? And are duties on public bodies enough to make the scale of change needed?
I think it's really interesting.
I don't envy in some ways her commissioners, because they have a very important role, both in terms of looking at the best in every country in the UK, but also looking at the best and seeing how we can make the best better.
I think it's really interesting that you talk about the way that the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act underpins an awful lot of the thinking that's going into environmental and countryside and farming policy as we move forward. I wonder if you could talk about the way in which Welsh government policy differs from Westminster policy as we plan to leave the European Union, as we think about the future of land use and agriculture.
Yes, I mean, I think what is interesting about the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act is, of course, it's not just a single pillar of government. It is actually a framework at the heart of government that covers all the government responsibilities in Wales. It's overseen by a commissioner. It is overseen by the Audit Office. And if people outside government or the public services in Wales who have the duty to deliver under it are not content, they can go to law. They can seek a judicial review. And it redefines prosperity. I mean, for example, prosperity is now defined in Wales as an innovative, productive and low carbon society, which recognises the limits of the global environment and uses resources efficiently and proportionately, including acting on climate change. And when we think about resilience, for example, which is very important in terms of the inquiry, it is described in law as a nation which maintains and enhances a biodiverse natural environment with healthy functioning ecosystems that support social, economic and ecological resilience. And all the goals, all seven of the goals, which link very closely to the Sustainable Development Goals, have legal descriptions. So you can already start seeing that if you're going to use this narrative in the context of what the outcomes are going to be, then it will require different kinds of behaviour.
So Jane, that's a really clear framework for the way that the Welsh Government is likely to sort of approach this as it goes forward. So you've worked with DEFRA, you've worked with people within the Welsh Government. How do you feel, where do you feel the differences are? I mean, there must be personality differences as well as priority differences. The Welsh Government team is smaller, much better able to talk to, you know, they can talk to each other more easily and actually come to a sort of cohesive view of the way forward in a way that's much more difficult, I think, in DEFRA.
I think that's a really good question, Finlow, and one of the reasons I think that I have a particular insight into this is that whilst I am chief exec of a UK-based commission, I'm also a Welsh farmer. I live in Wales and I farm in Wales. And my experience of agricultural support and agricultural policy is through the lens of the Welsh Government. And over again, I hear my English colleague talking about their experiences with DEFRA and the Royal Payments Agency. And it is very, very different to mine. I feel generally well supported. I feel that the Welsh Government wants me to succeed, down to even basic things like if I've left it a bit late to get some forms in, they'll ring me rather than fine me. And that is a very vivid, you know, it's a small, but it's a vivid illustration of the different approach the Welsh Government takes to farming and its farm community. And I think that shows up in the way that Welsh Government and Welsh policy appreciates that farming plays a really significant part in Welsh cultural life too. In the rural communities, particularly in mid and west and north Wales, it's often where the language resides and where really important aspects of Welsh cultural life are still rich and vibrant. And Welsh Government understands that that also needs to be supported in the context of a thriving farming business and rural communities. The other difference that I think is really, really important, I think it's going to get even more important in the coronavirus context. And as we think about what that means for resilience and adaptation for climate and nature emergencies, is that Wales is a small country. Jane mentioned earlier that very often small countries, in fact, by and large, small countries have stronger bonds of trust and relationship with their citizens. And in Wales, that shows up through the organisations called the Public Service Boards. The Public Services Boards bring together the different agencies at a local level and enable them to join up what is otherwise often very fragmented or siloed policy decisions, join them up and connect them on a place basis. And that is a very different orientation to what I notice in England.
So actually, I mean, this is one of the areas that the report looks at, isn't it? The need for national government to connect with local government and regional decision-making processes as well. And I think, I mean, just in the conversations that I've heard around the approach that the Welsh Government is taking, there's a slightly more directive approach. So, for example, there are conversations about, in order for farmers to get their financial support on an annual basis, you know, should there be a requirement for carbon footprinting, for example, on farm and the measurement of various other outcomes, you know, so that's quite a directive approach, whereas the English government approach is much more kind of left to the market. We've got these public goods. You come up with your solution if you want to access that funding. Otherwise, you know, don't worry, you can crack on, which runs the risk of creating quite a patchwork. In some places, you have some really good action in terms of public goods, and in other places, you have almost no action at all. Whereas in Wales, fails. It seems to be designed from the outset to be something which is delivered, where the financial mechanisms are being used to make sure there's delivery across the country.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think, again, this is an illustration of Wales's thinking, in my view, is more radical and more progressive than in England. So I think Welsh government understands and is doing the work to make all land matter and to join up those different drivers and levers for farmers and land managers, so that if government is seeking to incentivize progress and development in one aspect, say carbon sequestration, they're not at the same time allowing farmers to deplete soil resources through farming practices elsewhere.
So the whole farm approach.
In Wales, it appears the whole farm approach, exactly. So it looks as though that is the approach that Wales is going to adopt. It's not quite finalised yet, but let's say if we keep saying it out loud often enough, it'll give them courage to step into this direction. But I think it's another manifestation actually of how Government of Wales is actually very good at joining the dots between the sorts of policy silos that in other parts of the UK often get separated and fragmented and picked off in those kind of different buckets of activity.
My experience in England as well seems to indicate that there is, government is very quick and very keen to load responsibilities onto local authorities at the same time as then stripping the amount of money that they have to deliver those responsibilities away.
I think there are two critical things around the relationship between the Welsh government and local authorities and all public services that are required to deliver on the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act. As has already been described, the mechanism by which the public services deliver on the Act collaboratively is the public services boards. And they're starting to come up with some really exciting ideas. One of the ones we highlighted in the Wales report was one in which I was personally involved, which was looking about how we can use the critical mass of the public plate to procure new kinds of growing, distribution and production opportunities in Carmarthenshire. And what was really interesting to me sitting at the table discussing that was that as soon as we agreed it and we let others know that we'd agreed it, we had interest from across the UK, because everybody is looking for new mechanisms for procurement. Because we know if we're going to be able to bring the local benefit and the benefit back to the individual farmer or grower, if we're going to make that a much fairer system, then we have to reward those people who do the work at the bottom of the supply chain. And everybody was terribly excited about the idea that we could do something through public procurement, so much so that we've now won £100,000 through Welsh Government in terms of taking that idea forward. And we're going to be tracking that through the inquiry. But importantly, it was the public services boards as a mechanism where all the public authorities get together and they think about the best ideas for future generations is becoming a real mechanism to drive change. And I think what's really important in that relationship between Welsh Government and local authorities is that everybody can get in the room together. And therefore, there has not been the kind of nakedly political operation that we've seen in other parts of the UK in terms of how funding moves from government to local authorities. What happens in Wales is that people will always think there's not enough money in the system. That's the nature of it. But it's done according to a formula which is agreed between the Welsh Government and the Welsh Local Government Association. But the approaches are predicated not only on the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act, but also on the fact that the Welsh Government was the first to declare a climate emergency, and the National Assembly for Wales was the first legislature to declare a climate emergency, which means that the Welsh Government has the full support of the National Assembly for Wales in taking action on climate. So as Sue has described, when you have that mechanism in place, it means that the whole farm approach, the whole countryside approach, the whole country approach can be taken forward in a coherent narrative.
And you talk about the inquiry report and the way in which public procurement is at the heart of that. And that's one of the four sort of big pillars of the report, isn't it, really? And talking about the way that public procurement can be used to increase and to sustain the pace of change that's necessary. And when, you know, you talk about the climate emergency, and if we put in parallel with that, the biodiversity emergency that we face as well, the scale of change that we need is actually really quite substantial. I mean, it's quite revolutionary. And so the role that public procurement can play in that must be absolutely fundamental, because it's such an enormous player.
Absolutely, absolutely. Public procurement brings an enormous amount of money from keystone institutions into decision making, but it also has the opportunity to make commitments. And by making commitments to farmers and growers for the long term, it has a really powerful role to play to help the system as it is pivot to the system as it needs to be. So as Jane was describing, a piece of work we did with Wales for the main body of the report was to understand more about the relationship between public bodies, keystone public institutions, and the farmers and growers who are looking to get a bigger slice of that public pie. Public bodies would often say, we would love to work with local producers more, but it's not consistent enough, there's not enough of it, it's difficult to contract with lots of small players. Well, lots of reasons in their account of why it was in the too hard box. But by working with farmers and growers and initiating some learning groups with farmers and growers, we were able to understand a little bit more about what kinds of conditions they needed in order to be able to change their growing, their farming practices, to be able to sell in more effectively to those public institutions. And they talked about having patient investment that enable them to make changes. It takes, you can't just change your growing overnight. It can take 1, 2, 3, 7 years to change a rotation on a farm to move from producing one kind of food to something that is very different. And for farmers to be able to make what could sometimes be a really significant investment in making the changes that we all know we need in new agroecological farming systems, then they need to have some confidence that they will be supported by the public institutions that in turn benefit from that change. So bringing those conversations together felt to me to be a really important breakthrough to understand more about what both sides of that contracting relationship really need. And again, I think this is a feature of, you know, being in a small country where politicians and policymakers are in fact quite close to, physically close, as well as culturally close to the people that they're talking with. So it has a real materiality. It's not an abstracted conversation. It has a real materiality in policy making when you know that you're talking about this farm, this village, this hospital, this school. So it really kind of, you know, people have real skin in the game, and that shows through.
I'm starting to grin as you talk about that. Years ago, I was General Secretary of the National Farmers Union on the Isle of Man, and remember a situation where when reforms were being proposed, you know, there were schisms sort of starting to occur between the farmers and the government. And actually, we just brought the President of the Union round to the Minister's house, and we had a cup of coffee and got it sorted. And there is a real benefit to being able to do that. The smaller the country, the bigger that opportunity. But look, in the introduction, I talked quite a bit about the way in which the Commission is really good at sort of putting people and landscape back in the heart of that conversation. And we talked quite a lot about structures, and that's been really important, and the policy approaches, the policy differences between England and Wales and the opportunities in Wales. I wonder, Sue, if you could reflect a little bit, are there unique challenges that are actually facing Welsh farmers that are different to other farmers in other parts of the UK or other parts of the world even? And what is it in particular that you think that Welsh farming is really good at?
So at the moment, Welsh farming tends to revolve around red meat production, and red meat production in a landscape that is largely what is called in European Union language less favoured areas. And there are a number of reasons why that system of production is under threat and is being challenged. partly because as a nation, we're eating less red meat, but also because people are reflecting on the impact of those farming practices on Welsh landscapes and whether or not those landscapes are better suited for other nature recovery and climate mitigation practices like tree planting, for example.
Or better combining the two things together in the agroecological systems you were mentioning before.
Well, that's exactly right. But at the moment, the debate tends to be somewhat polarised and polarising. It's often presented as an either or. The solution is indeed, as you say, Finlow, in a bit more both and. How can we both mitigate impacts on climate, reverse climate change? How can we reverse biodiversity loss, regenerate nature? How can we produce more of the healthy fruit, vegetables and meat and dairy from sustainable sources that we know we need to be eating? So I think it is true to say that for some farmers in some parts of Wales, some of their farming practices are going to have to change. But I think there are also huge opportunities. At the moment, Wales grows a tiny fraction, or an even smaller fraction of its land, of the fruit and veg that we need to be eating more of. And as part of a globally responsible Wales, taking more responsibility for growing more of the healthy fruit and veg that we need to eat is a really critical component of that. So turning over some of the land that is currently under grass to more horticulture, or encouraging the formation of market gardens around our towns and cities, creating perhaps a donut of horticulture around our towns and cities so that fresh produce is more quickly and easily available to people there. Encouraging new young entrants into farming and food production. One of our suggestions is to see community-supported agriculture in every county in Wales and providing opportunities for young people who are, frankly, really enthusiastic about taking up this challenge, to really get their hands dirty and, you know, take up that work themselves. We know the appetite is there. So some more matchmaking between making land available for more sustainable food production closer to our centres of population is the opportunity that's waiting to be grasped.
It's always been a frustration for me that, particularly when the conversation is focused too much on climate change and climate change alone, that you can have this really divisive conversation where, this bit of land just needs to be put to Sitka spruce and so you can sequester as much as you possibly can. And one of the things that I think is really helpful about the way that the Commission approaches things is that you are trying to bring this range of public goods together and encourage systems in which land is producing multiple outcomes. When you start combining biodiversity loss or biodiversity improvement with climate policy, you get quite different results. And then when you load in the need to sort of help and sustain local economies and keep that sort of strength of local jobs, then that becomes really powerful. But the idea on top of that, that there will be more land put to fruit and veg, which is currently, as you say, largely imported, and a localization of some of those supply chains that people are buying much more directly from individual farmers or from cooperatives, sounds fantastic.
Absolutely. Well, I'm a livestock farmer myself. I grow lamb and I grow beef, but I farm organically and I farm for conservation. So that means the breeds that I keep and grow are well suited to thriving on what is sometimes called unimproved pasture. What that actually means is that it's a real range of flora in the fields, and they convert that very effectively to really high quality protein, slowly maturing over a longer period of time. So I like to think that I'm finding a way of doing both. I'm producing really high quality and incredibly tasty food, but I'm doing it in a way that enhances our environment, that it enhances biodiversity and sequesters carbon. So it absolutely is possible to do both. We talk about more diverse, more localized systems. More diverse systems are always more resilient. What we've seen through the corona crisis has been the centralized, consolidated systems being most fragile. When retailers are reliant on one or two suppliers and they hit a crisis, then the system can very quickly fall over. But more diverse ecosystems, a variety of sizes of farm, of type of farm, of productive capacity, is always likely to be more resilient, particularly at times of crisis.
Diversity in the sward, diversity in systems, diversity in ideas. It's good stuff. Jane, we've looked there at some of the things that Welsh farming is really good at. We've talked about some of the unique challenges that Welsh farmers are facing. I wonder if you're able to identify any of the particular challenges that you think need addressing, some of the bad practice perhaps that you're hoping will change as a result of this work.
I think there are three key challenges for me. I think this point about how little of our fruit and vegetables we grow is an absolutely critical one. And it's where horticulture sits in the system as well, in terms of the value or otherwise of it. We only grow 2% of our fruit and vegetable needs in Wales at the moment on 0.001% of our land. So the amounts are absolutely tiny. I'm a smallholder. We keep pigs, we keep turkeys, we keep ducks, we keep chickens. We grow as much of our own fruit and vegetables as we can. And we're in an area where a lot of other people do similarly. And that sustained us all incredibly well during the COVID crisis, in the sense that there were so many people who had small businesses where actually that they could provide food for others in the community. And so suddenly local became really important. And we tell one particular story as well in our Wales Field Guide about actually our local miller in my local village, where she'd been trying for 3 years to get her flour into all the shops in Cardigan, and they were all tied up with different arrangements. You know exactly what I'm going to say in the context of COVID. Along comes the problem, the supermarket and all shelves are cleared, and there we have the miller of St Dogmell's is able to provide flour not only for this community, not only for Cardigan, but actually now much wider afield. She now has delivered on her 3-year business plan in 6 weeks and created a whole new set of supply chain opportunities. So I think there's something around COVID where we do need to look at where the local has been able to step in and actually therefore has become a beacon of light that can be helped in terms of sustaining to the next stage of their business plan. And I know that Sue and the commissioners are really looking at that across the whole of the UK. The second challenge, and I use this as an example, is this challenge about supply chains. And who does what in the context of supply chains? What is the role of local authorities? What is the role of government in the context of supply chains? Because living very much in the west of Wales, as I do, you know, almost closer to Dublin than I am to London, it means that actually it takes a long time for things to get here and a long time for things to leave here. We don't have the road infrastructure. The railway infrastructure all went with the Beeching Cuts in the 1960s. How do we get, you know, the best of the produce from West Wales into the rest of the UK? And of course, there'll be plenty of examples in England, Scotland and Northern Ireland of similar issues. And whose responsibility is it? Because if we are going to create more opportunities for example, community supported agriculture schemes in every community council, then where is their spare produce going to go? Because otherwise they will not have a workable business plan. So I think that second issue around supply chains, when Wales has always been on the periphery anyway, becomes a really important one. And the third issue, I'm afraid, is the climate change issue, in the sense that the UK Committee on Climate Change opined that Scotland could deliver on net zero by 2045, England by 2050, and Wales not until 2055. And when asked why, it was the agricultural practices. 88% of Wales is agricultural land, less favoured land. Of course, most of the farmers here farm beef and sheep. We're very, very good in Wales at growing grass. So what, you know, since we're so good at growing grass, what are the opportunities in Wales to diversify? And that's not for me about getting rid of beef or sheep at all. It's about what is the place of what are the food supplies that we're going to need in ways that we can also address the climate deficit and the nature deficit. And therefore, these are really important discussions for the inquiry.
You both mentioned COVID at different times. And of course, this report has been written at the time of COVID. And I wonder if there are things about the coronavirus pandemic that have informed informed the report and meant that the report is different than it would have been otherwise? So
what we've learned through the corona crisis is that local really does matter. In the past, we've made statements about how important localising systems will be in the future when we were thinking about the climate and nature crisis, but it has become incredibly important right now. And what we've been living through in the last 4 or 5 months is in fact a dress rehearsal for what it really takes to build, support, sustain more resilient, more adaptive communities. So a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about and proposing for the next 10 years has come to pass really quickly, looking at the way communities have responded really creatively and imaginatively at a time of crisis. You know, lots of the stories, lots of the hero stories of the moment talk about big retail and big institutional responses. But for me, the hero stories are coming from the grassroots. They're coming from the villages and communities around Wales, where without waiting to be instructed by government or by a council, people worked out what their neighbours needed. They worked out very quickly how they needed to get hold of it. They knew whether they were vulnerable, shielding or safeguarding, because they knew them as people. And they went and did their shopping for them. They went and got what they needed and brought them to their homes. They, you know, tapped on the windows to make sure people were safe. So the power of resilient, responsive, adaptive communities has been demonstrated in vivid clarity in stories all around Wales. There's a lovely story in the Wales Inquiry report from Caws Kenarth, the cheese producer. There was a moment at the start of the crisis when the whole hospitality sector completely fell over. And for Carwin, who was supplying his cheese, his gorgeous cheese, into the hospitality sector, suddenly found he had shelves and shelves and shelves of it that he was not going to be able to get rid of and that he was going to have to throw away. And he put out a call on social media, on YouTube, and it was shared on Twitter to say, we're about to go down. We're going to be wasting all our produce. If you can buy some, we'll be really grateful. But actually, if you just want some, let us know, because I'd rather give it away than waste it. And he was inundated with responses. Absolutely inundated, didn't have to give any away, was able to find a home for all of it and had to close his orders. And that story is replicated around Wales, where small local producers, in putting out a call, had it responded to absolutely in spades by people, not just in Wales, but across the UK, who have a real warmth and connection with products, with provenance, and with producers who want to have a relationship with their customers and with their communities. So I think it's been very, very difficult and dark times for many people. And some parts of the sector, like the hospitality sector, will take still some time to recover, and it will not be the same for many years. But there are also many silver linings in this experience. And I think it is helping us understand in real granular detail what really matters to us. And that comes down to very often where we live and who we live with, our community, our neighbours, our relationships. And when a crisis hits, that's what matters.
And so the hope is that out of this dark cloud, that, as you put it, a silver lining is there, that we've seen this acceleration of change in systems to deliver greater resilience at local level, focus around provenance, as you say, and a support between the people who grow food and the people who eat food using social media, which is fantastic. And Jane, you mentioned that, you know, the miller who had, you know, accelerated her business plan. Do you think that her success will be sustained? Do you envisage a situation where those shops that are now stocking her product will continue stocking her product if we ever move out of the coronavirus time?
Yes, I do. In that circumstance, I very much do, because there isn't a competitive mill, as it were. So I'm absolutely confident that they will. Not least because the main bakery in Cardigan has been using her flour for a number of years to bake bread anyway. So in a sense, the provenance and the quality had been demonstrated. I do think there's one area, though, that we have to very much keep in mind in this context. I'm acutely aware that Cardigan Food Bank, which is my local food bank, had a massive increase in calls on its resource during COVID. And we did also see a commensurate increase in people funding the food bank as well. But the most of those, the food bank regular source, was from people people dropping tins into supermarkets and then those supermarkets handing that down to the food bank. And of course, during COVID, that has not happened in the same way at all. And they have relied and had to rely on huge increase in terms of personal donations to the food bank. And when you're looking at such massive increases, you realise just how many people are needing that resource. So I was particularly pleased to see that the part one of the National Food Strategy explicitly talked about addressing some of those areas of disadvantage. I mean, Wales and Scotland, interestingly enough, have kept school meals going, have provided them through the summers, and we're going to continue to do that without any input from, you know, Marcus Rashford, for example. So there was already a well-being economics approach in both of those smaller countries. And I think that's where the narrative is important, that by having a Wellbeing of Future Generations Act in Wales, that narrative means that you do act more preventatively. You are thinking long term. So you will make different decisions. And I think that, we all have to keep our eye particularly on that word just in the context of how food is delivered for the future. Because if a government cannot look after the most vulnerable in its population, one could argue, what is the purpose of government? And I do feel confident that through the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act and before, that the government of Wales will rise to that challenge, whichever political party it is, because of that commitment within a small nation.
So there's a combination of hopes and aspirations, accelerated change as a result of coronavirus, but also that sobering note at the end, Jane, and the hope that, as you say, that Wales will be successful in making sure that the systems work for everybody as a result of that all-important Act of Parliament. Look, that's all we have time for. We could carry on this conversation, I'm sure, but we have to stop. I'd like to thank my guests, Sue Pritchard, the Chief Executive of the Food, Farming and Countryside Commission, and Jane Davidson, the Chair of the Commission's Wales Inquiry. You can read the Commission's Wales report at ffcc.co.uk. If you've enjoyed listening, please come back and listen to more. Tell your friends, like us, review us, and share our links. Farmgate is a partnership project for Farmwell and FAI Farms. We're funded by Sankalpa, and you can join the conversation as ever on Twitter by searching for Farmgate Podcast. I've been Finlow Castain. Bye for now.